Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Alexis Madrigal. Three of five seats on the Napa County Board of Supervisors are up for grabs this March. The results could have major implications for the county and its world-famous wine industry. The winning candidates will have to tackle controversial issues like how and where agriculture can expand, how to support the workforce, and how to protect the environment amid demand for housing and commercial development. We'll talk about the election and Napa's future. That's all coming up next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Alexis Madrigal. We're talking this morning about three races on the March 5th primary ballot that some are saying could shape the future of Napa's wine industry. Voting is underway for three spots on the five-member Napa County Board of Supervisors. And joining us for the hour to break those down are Dave McEwen, professor of political science at Sonoma State University. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Dan Evans, executive editor of the Napa Valley Register. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good, good. And two reporters from KQED's Unstoppable Audience News team, Carlos Cabrera, Loma Lee, Nisa Khan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So, Dave, I want to start with you. You've been following politics in the North Bay and in Napa for a while. What do you find most significant about these Board of Supervisors elections?
Well, if you look at Napa proper and you think about Napa, right, the county is a little larger than Berkeley, but smaller than Hayward. It has a population about one-fifth that are under 18 and about one-fifth that are over 65. So it's relatively small. But what Napa represents in terms of the conflict between wine, agriculture, environmental concerns, where the county is going, and what's at stake for these three of five seats is fascinating and also emblematic of what we see going on in the state. It's not just that Napa is this, you know, Disneyland place of wine and food and Michelin-starred restaurants. It's something different than that. It's about quality of life. And when you look at these three races, you see some developments that are going on in the background. You see some changes with the candidates and some rematches. You see a lineup that really foretells where the future of Napa will go, what that balance will be. And we see that in counties throughout California. So in some ways, it's like looking through the crystal ball to see what is going to happen throughout the state between have and have-nots, class, race, gender, housing, all of those issues. And so this particular election, even though it's close and right on the heels, right, with March 5th and a lot of voters just starting to pay attention, it does give us some sense of where things are going more broadly, even though the size of Napa is relatively small.
Yeah, a lot of interesting cross currents in these three races. Dan, I saw a headline in Wine Searcher that said Napa stance on wine is at stake in these elections. What do you make of that? And then maybe just, you know, how do you view the politics of wine in county government?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think probably that has a lot to do with the controversial Lee Colleen decision. The Board of Supervisors turned down a development that would have created a new vineyard that the applicants said that they had gone through all of everything that the county had asked them in terms of environmental concerns and done everything that they were asked to do. And yet they were turned down anyway because of environmental issues with watersheds and things like that. The Board of Supervisors, in turning down the decision, said that there were different parts of the general plan that they were trying to balance between the requirements and also the environmental concerns. So that was a 3-2 vote, and a lot of people said that had there been different people on the board, it would have gone the other way. And that's essentially what I think they're trying to say there is that does this portend that it's going to be impossible to have a new winery with depending on the makeup of the board of supervisors or not, or will people get a fair shake? Now that's what's the concern there.
I mean, you mentioned the general plan. Maybe taking a step back, what is kind of the purview of the Board of Supervisors that intersects with issues about agriculture and the environment? I mean, what are they doing in their day-to-day jobs that makes this a focus for those folks interested in those kind of sectors?
Well, so the Board of Supervisors, like Board of Supervisors everywhere in the state, oversees land use in unincorporated areas. So the only place really that you can have a vineyard in Napa County is in unincorporated areas because of the agricultural preserve, which basically made Napa the way it was in the 1960s. So the only places you can do that. So the Board of Supervisors absolutely oversees 99% of vineyard development type stuff. So that's why. Mm-hmm. But primarily they do what all boards of supervisors do. They oversee the budget for health and human services, which is by far the largest part of the budget. They oversee the budget for the district attorney and the sheriff's office, all sorts of things. The things that gets the news, of course, is vineyard development. Right. But that is only one part of their job.
And Nisa Khan, you focused on the District 4 supervisor race in your coverage in KQED's voter guide. What were the issues that you were focusing on in the northeast part of the county?
Right. So I focus a lot on drinking water, affordable housing, but especially in the lens of the state trying to meet their housing goals, and especially fire preparedness, of course, in Napa County, with the emphasis of the aftermath and how residents can rebuild.
Mm-hmm. And what were, you know, when it comes to housing, obviously some ambitious goals to meet from the state. You know, what is kind of the conversation around housing development that you looked into as you were talking with the candidates?
I think the candidates had a lot of ideas about sort of investing in existing community land trust. They both acknowledged the extremely high cost of living in mm-hmm. the county. Manfred, one of the candidates really focused on a lot of like kind of practical, like how to actually build a housing, while the other candidate really focused on like existing programs that are there and kind of investing more in them.
And Carlos Cabrera Loma Lee, you've covered supervisor races in Napa now for two cycles. Are you seeing kind of the same issues rise to the fore in 2024 that we saw in the 2022 elections?
Yes, yes. It's all about land and how we're using county land. Are we using county land to expand vineyards, or are we using it to think proactively about housing and water? And, something that I also focused on, and, you know, Nisa touched on this, is wildfire protection in the long term. Right now, the county doesn't have a long-term sustainable plan to finance wildfire protection. It's all coming out of the general fund, including the contract that the county has with CAL FIRE. In 2022, the voters turned out Measure L, which would have provided a 10-year solution to the wildfire financing issue. But that was, again, turned down. So, you know, I spoke to both candidates in this district, in District 5, and asked, you know, what are you planning to do? And, you know, both said that they would have rethought the way that Measure L was campaigned for, and that there could be a possibility for Measure L in the future, something like it. And we also spoke about housing solutions, like strengthening and expanding the county's ADU forgivable loan program, and strengthening protections for the county's vineyard workers, farm mm-hmm. workers.
I know that's an issue you've focused on not only in Napa, but also in Sonoma as well. Dan, I want to ask, you know, looming over all these elections is this ongoing FBI investigation first reported by the Register that, you know, the FBI is looking for county records related to dozens of wineries, businesses. Just big picture, like, what do we know about this currently?
Well, that's a big question. We don't know a lot. We did get the subpoenas. There were three subpoenas. The first one involved a list of 40 names, and those names were a lot of vineyards, a lot of vineyard owners, a lot of people involved in politics in some way or form, but not entirely clear who was connected to what. I'll get into that in a second because that's kind of a big one. One having to do with the Upper Valley Waste Disposal, which is our dump, which is in the Up Valley area, and another dealing with the airport. The documents related that we that were responsive. So we got the subpoenas, and then we asked for the documents that the FBI was looking for from the county. There weren't a lot, you know, in terms of what was responsive. It had to, a lot to do with it had to do a lot with land use stuff. With it had to do with road projects, actually. So, and that had a lot to do with the dump. So we're just trying to figure out that. But the one that may has the most impact on the politics was the one dealing with all of the vineyards and winery owners and things like that. That was one of the people the county had, the FBI had asked for, was information regarding the owners of the Vindos property, which is the current supervisor for the District 4, in District 4, that's Alfredo Pedroza. That's his in-laws. And that was related to a earlier deal that Pedroza, an earlier vote Pedroza had in late 2021 that approved a property adjacent to the property his in-laws owned. That property, the Walt Ranch, has now become open space. But the FPPC, the California Fair Political Fair Political Practices Commission investigation, is still ongoing. Whether or not any of that is related to that is unclear. But what did happen was Pedroza, who had announced he was going to run for state senate in District 3, that that is currently held by Bill Dodd, who was termed out of that seat, he dropped out of that race. And said he was not going to run for re-election in District 4.
Mm-hmm. So, and just having this investigation going on involving so many high-profile businesses and the county, does this, do you think this is going to factor in at all to the elections coming up for supervisor? And we have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I assume so. Now, how it relates and how it plays in, maybe not clear. Now, it's going to be... I think people are going to look very closely at the endorsements that Pete Mott and Amber Manfrey have received to see how they relate to the different industries. Both have, if I recall correctly, been supported by different members of the wine industry in different spots. So it's going to be, you know, just something that people are going to be closely attention to.
We're talking about three seats on the Napa Board of Supervisors that are on the ballot this March. Voting is underway, and we want to hear from you, especially Napa voters. What are the top local issues driving your choices at the ballot? We want to hear from the 707. Give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch, forum@kqed.org, or on our social channels at KQED Forum and in our Discord community. We're heading into a break. When we come back, more on the six candidates running for supervisor in an election that could shape Napa for years to come.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Alexis Madrigal. The election underway right now in California is a primary election, but in the race for Board of Supervisors in Napa, this is it. This is the final six candidates running for three seats. The winners will all be decided on March 5th. And we want to hear from you. Are you a Napa County resident? What races and candidates are you watching? And what are the key issues that you want your Board of Supervisors to address? And what are your views on the board's ability to balance the needs of the wine industry, the needs of residents, the environment? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or find us on social channels at KQED Forum. Don't forget about our Discord community. Hit us up there. Joining to discuss what's at stake for Napa County in this big election, Dave McEwen, professor of political science at Sonoma State University, Dan Evans, executive editor of the Napa Valley Register, Carlos Cabrera Loma Lee, KQED community reporter, and Nisa Khan, KQED audience engagement reporter. Nisa, let's dive into one of these three races for the board, District 4, that you're covering. Tell us, who are the two candidates running for this seat?
Right. So we have Amber Manfrey. They are a science writer and a researcher of geology. They got their degrees from UC Davis, which is coming kind of in a different angle. And she ran for supervisor in 2020, but lost that election. And then she's going up against Pete Mott, who's a former Napa City Council member for 12 years before losing re-election in 2018. He's also on the Napa City Planning Commission and is currently on the Napa Sanitation Board over for a decade, too. So a lot of city politics experience. Outside of that, he's also a business owner.
And where did the candidates differ in their responses to your questions, or what are they emphasizing in their campaigns?
Right. I think they had a lot of similar ideas in investing in existing programming for housing or additional staffing for a county after fires to support the residents, things like that. Manfrey had really thorough ideas approaching housing and how that would look like kind of physically. And Mott's higher priorities that was not mentioned with Amber Manfrey was like better roads and improvement projects like sidewalks, which he mentioned that pavement condition index in Napa County remains lowest in the Bay Area. So that was kind of a priority for him. I think also, according to the Napa Valley Register, they had a different kind of viewpoints of the controversial vineyard plan. Manfrey agreed with the board decision to reject it, while Mott was like, if they had more protections, I probably would have like agreed if they had more protections, but at that moment probably would have said no. So I thought that was also a really interesting thing in how they viewed this like, very kind of prominent Napa politics.
And Dan, you talked a little bit before the break about Alfredo Pedroza, ongoing investigation at the county. What is his kind of legacy on the board? What is the kind of supervisor, the kind of policy direction in District 4 that Manfrey and Mott are now running to potentially succeed?
Well, Pedroza has been very, very active in regional transportation issues. So he was the chair of the Regional Transportation Board and done a lot in that area. In terms of his larger political legacy, I suppose it would be, well, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting sort of thing. He's been very active on the board. He would have approved Lee Colleen. He is seen, fairly or not, as more friendly to business interests and vineyards, the wine industry or the larger wine industry as a whole. And the question is whether or not Amber Manfrey would be considered more on the environmental progressive side of the line, whereas Piedmont might be considered more of the moderate side of the line on that as a small business owner, perhaps having more sympathy perhaps towards business interests. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say, but it's because Pete Mott's background is not the same as Alfredo Pedroza's. Alfredo was the youngest member of the city council when he was when he joined it, and was appointed to the Board of Supervisors and then won re-election. So he has had a very quick political career, one that seems to have at least paused for the moment. So it's he's an interesting character and very, very smart, knows a lot of things, a lot of people. But he has gotten caught up in a lot of controversies.
Mm-hmm. Dave McEwen, you heard Dan talk about environmental, moderate. I mean, how would you describe the kind of factions or divides we typically see in local politics in Napa? Because these supervisor seats, you're not running as a Democrat or a Republican.
Right. I mean, if you look at, I certainly think that the marquee race is that District 4 race to succeed Alfredo, partly because of the battles that have been going on about land use. But there's a broader kind of set of issues, right? There's housing that your guest talked about. There's the future of ag. There's the general plan, wildfires, the role of the wine industry in sustainability. You look at all of those issues and you see someone like Amber Manfrey, endorsed by the Sierra Club, former supervisor Brad Wackenack, Joelle Gallagher. She is someone who would take the board in a clearly different direction than Alfredo, as opposed to someone like Pete Mott, who does have, like, he's a Chamber of Commerce style Democrat, has the realtors behind him, but he also has like Planned Parenthood. And you look at that particular race and how it tilts the board. If Amber were elected, as Dan's noted, right, all five members of the board would be women. That would be noteworthy for the first time. We see this up and down the ballot. And then we look at other races, like what's going on in the South, District 5 with Belia Ramos running for re-election, but she's matched up against the person who she defeated in 2020. And American Canyon's very different than Yountville. It's very different than Napa proper and what's going on, say, in the north and the south, the east and west of Napa County. Particular race is very interesting because it will take housing in a different direction. It will take the general plan in a different direction, or pushing what looks like in terms of development. I think less so of the third race that would be in District 2. The matchup there with Liz Alicio and Doris Gentry seems less of a battle, but also would still nonetheless move the board in a different direction. That probably sets up some battles, certainly down the line, as we look at a next generation of leaders coming to the fore in Napa. And I think more broadly, that's what you're seeing. This is the opportunity for a real generational change. And Alfredo represented that when he came onto the board. But the controversial decisions that have resulted have at least put his political career on pause, if not taken it in a different direction. That is dramatic for Napa, and also symptomatic of what we see throughout the state.
We're talking about three elections for the Board of Supervisors in Napa on the ballot March 5th. Voting is underway, and we want to hear from you if you're a Napa County resident. What races, what candidates are you watching, and what are the issues that are really going to make up your minds when you cast your ballot for supervisor? Judy from Napa has called in. We're going to go to you now. Good morning, Judy.
Thank you. Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a question for Dan Evans. I am a Napa resident, was a subscriber to the Napa Valley Register until they were purchased and downsized so terribly. But I'm also the head of a group here called Progressive Women of Napa Valley, and we also endorse local candidates for office. And we heard anecdotally, of course, from the candidates who were interviewed by the Register that the editorial board that does the interviewing has been reduced to only three people, and asked rather irrelevant questions of the candidates, like their marital status and whether they had children. And I just wondered why they were asking those kinds of questions and why the editorial board is so small.
All right. Well, thank you, Judy, for calling in. Dan, I don't know if take a crack at that. Maybe just take us through what is the editorial process that ultimately ends up in with endorsements by the Register?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things, and that's true, we did reduce the size of the board, and that was because we were looking for a board that was able to be more engaged. The larger board was very busy, and it was made up of seven community members that were doing many, many things throughout the year. And so they were not able to be as engaged and really to write under their own name to show, I thought, a sense of transparency. The size of the board it will grow. It's just that it didn't grow in time for the endorsements. So that's my hope, that it does grow, that there are people that have the time to commit to it. As for the questions we asked a number of questions that were not published. We did it as a general background, asking people about any as many, many editorial boards do, about any legal issues they might have had, any conflicts of interest. There is much more about the difference between news gathering and publishing. You ask as many questions and you only publish what's relevant. So yes, people were perhaps upset about the questions, but I think it's important to note that we did not publish people's marital status or how many kids they had, because we didn't think it was relevant. But we needed to know that so we could see what kinds of issues might pop up. For no publication wants to be embarrassed because something came out that they weren't aware of. But, you know, some people are certainly going to be upset, and that's okay. That's part of the job. All we can do is be as transparent as possible.
Right. All right, Carlos, I want to turn to District 5, Southeast Napa, American Canyon. You've covered this for our voter guide this year. Tell us about the two candidates running there in District 5.
Right. And we were just mentioning this a bit earlier, that we have a rematch over here. So incumbent Belia Ramos is once again facing off against Mariam Abudamos, city council member for American Canyon. They last faced off in 2020. Ramos is strongly backed by the county's labor unions. While Abudamos has received a lot of endorsements from groups representing the wine industry. And while they have different types of support, they actually, see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, including housing. Like we were talking about before, the southeast of the county is very different from other parts of the county. A lot of folks living in American Canyon work in Vallejo, Solano, other parts of the county. So there's a lot of movement back and forth that part of the county. And that's actually one of the reasons that Abudamos got into public service, to reduce congestion in that part of the county. So she actually, is very excited about pushing for partnerships with individual cities to identify infill locations, to improve the amount of to help the county reach its housing goals. Ramos has also, on her time on the board, has been very proactive about making it easier for property owners to develop ADUs and get forgivable loans. And they're also, like I mentioned before, they really want to find a permanent solution to finance wildfire protection in the county as well. So while there are some differences, and, we can get into this later, like, for example, they had very different opinions about the Lee Colleen development. Ramos supported the pausing that development at the Board of Supervisors, while Abudamos strongly disagreed and said, hey, the developers invested all this money, all these resources. They were so meticulous about completing all the requirements. It should have gone through. There is a lot of stuff that they agree with, and I think that just reflects the unique nature of Southeast Napa County.
And are there, you mentioned Ramos running for a third term, are there votes beyond that Abudamos has targeted or looked at and said, look, I would have done this differently if I was on the board?
Yeah. In my conversations with her, it concentrated with the Lee Colleen development and the way that just the board's relationship with developers. In other parts of the county, there's a strong emphasis on protecting, in my conversations, for example, when Supervisor Gallagher, Supervisor Cottrell were running, they were very adamant about protecting certain, wildlife spaces. They told me, we don't necessarily want the county to lose its character. Folks come to Napa County, to get away from Oakland and San Francisco. But it's interesting how now over here at District 5, there is a whole different perspective of it. Abudamos, believes that we need to protect these spaces, but at the same time, she says there's employment offered through them. There's also, future economic opportunities. So I think it just goes into, where folks are, how our folks are employed in each part of the county.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go back to the phones now. And Peter, hey, Peter, good morning. Thanks for calling into Forum.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm a resident of Angwin here in Napa County. I am the forest manager for Pacific Union College, an Angwin Fire Safe Council board member, and a former Napa Firewise board member. We were very heavily affected here in Napa County by the 2017 and 2020 fires, where numerous homes and wildlands burned and lives were threatened. And to me, a bottom line issue for the county is that we need a durable funding source to fund wildfire mitigation and ecosystem resilience. The county has given some funds to the Napa Communities Firewise Foundation in the past, which I'm thankful for, but those are only temporary, and that, along with the grants from the state that we're getting, are renewed on the annual basis. So we need a durable funding source so that we can plan these projects to protect homes, lives, and ecosystems into the future. And this is a bottom line issue, not only for the safety of homes and ecosystems, but also for our tourism dollars, which is one of the main things that drives economic development here in Napa County.
All right. Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate your call. Carlos, this is something you talked about with the candidates in District 5.
That's right. So Measure L back in 2022 would have provided a 10-year funding solution for wildfire protection services. And it was, you know, it didn't get the exact the percentage of votes that need to pass. But, you know, Supervisor Ramos, she believes, you know, that, it, you know, there can be a lot of different ways to talk about this. For example, perhaps establishing a fire district. You know, she did recognize that the way that the campaign in favor of Measure L, you know, spoke to voters wasn't necessarily the best. There was a lot of misinformation among voters. You know, some voters thought, hey, are we going to be paying money to protect, you know, rich people's land or vineyards, which is not necessarily true. Abu Damus, who's, you know, facing off against Ramos, is open to bringing back a version of Measure L in the future on the ballot. And I think that's, you know, we are hearing this. There needs to be a long-term solution because what's happening, you know, everything coming from the general fund or depending on one-year grants may not be sustainable.
We're going to go back to the phones. Craig in Napa has called in. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for calling in. What's on your mind? How are you looking at these supervisor elections?
I live in the city of Napa, and I'm looking for candidates that will sort of address the human aspects of the wine industry. So certainly we need all the wineries and the Disneyland, as you called it earlier, to support our economic growth here in the county. But I'm also looking at candidates who can address some of the issues that we have with respect to workforce housing, getting our workers who are typically lower end on the economic scale access to health care, substance abuse services, and also looking at, you know, infrastructure that will relieve some of the gridlock on the, you know, that's caused by the people commuting back and forth to Napa to support the vineyards and the workforce. So I'm looking for this to kind of for candidates that can strike a balance between the economic growth that the wine industry provides and the human aspects of the labor force that we need to make that work.
Thanks so much, Craig. I really appreciate that call and that perspective. Nisa, those human issues that Craig talks about, housing, infrastructure, what did you hear from Amber Manfrey and Pete Mott running in District 4?
Right. I think for housing, they both acknowledged like the extremely high cost of living. Manfrey was really cognizant of residents who didn't want a ton of urban sprawl. So she said that like kind of in her like kind of planning, there'd be like a mix of housing styles to fulfill housing goals as well as like the desires of organized Napa residents. So a lot of it's like kind of a lot. One thing she says a lot, like, we'll be building upwards. We'll be building housing upwards. So I thought, and then Mott, on the other hand, is like kind of investing in existing programs like the county's workforce proximity program and the Napa County affordable ADU forgivable loan program. My apologies. And I think they both acknowledge like mental health services in Napa County as well. So that's kind of something they kind of both had really touched on in their discussions with me.
That's KQED's Nisa Khan. We're talking about the three races for supervisor in Napa County, District 2, 4, and 5. All will be decided in March. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the other biggest issues facing the county and its future leaders.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Alexis Madrigal. We've been talking about Napa County, where three seats on the Board of Supervisors will be decided in the March 5th election. Three open seats, six candidates. We're going to find out the winners in March. We've been talking with Dave McEwen, professor of political science at Sonoma State University, Dan Evans, executive editor of the Napa Valley Register, Carlos Cabrera Lomelí, KQED community reporter, and Nisa Khan, KQED audience engagement reporter. They've been covering the races in Napa for our voter guide. And we want to hear from you. If you're a Napa County resident, call in, tell us how you're viewing these supervisor races and how you'd like to see the board balance the desire to boost the wine industry and also address the needs of residents and the environment. We're at 866-733-6786, forum@kqed.org if you want to send us an email, or find us at KQED Forum in our social channels and Discord communities. We're going to go back to the phones now with Carol. Carol, good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, what's on your mind? How are you looking at these supervisor races?
Well, the supervisor races are good. They're clean, which we appreciate here in this county. But what is disappointing to me is that Dan Evans is somehow portraying this race as some of these races as us versus the wine industry. And I just want to assure the listeners that that could not be farther from the truth, that none of these candidates wants to see the wine industry fail in Napa County.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Dan, I mean, there's clearly is a tension, though, between issues on the environment when you're talking about the general plan. Is it fair to say that there's some conflict here, or how would you respond to Carol?
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit more complicated. There is a lot of nuance here. Like, so for instance, even though Liz Alessio sent a letter, her and two other members of the city council, she's a member of the Napa City Council, she did send a letter to the Board of Supervisors urging them to turn down Lee Colleen for environmental reasons or environmental concerns. She did say that she thought when, you know, in her interviews with us, she did say that she felt that one of the big issues is that winery owners, vineyard owners don't feel have a decent gripe with the county, and that they don't know always if they spend all this money and spend all this time, whether or not they're just going to get rejected at the end. And she said that needs to change. Liz Alessio is supported by the progressive sides and, you know, a lot of those groups. And so I think it's more nuanced than that. And I think that there is a tension, yes, but it is very clear that people on both sides of this do have an open mind. I think it's very clear that, you know, they have potentially a bend towards one side or another, but I don't think that anybody here is doctrinaire about it. I think there is a tension, but it is not. I think that there are groups in town, perhaps the Farm Bureau, which has traditionally felt it has made itself feel, you know, it has said things that make like it's being attacked by environmentalists. And I think that is overblown. So yes and no. There is a tension, but I think all six candidates would be open to additional development. I think it's just that it has to be done in their minds the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And
we've been getting questions about, you know, the Register's endorsement process. Where did you all land in the end on these three races?
So in District 2, we endorsed Liz Alessio. In District 4, Pete Mott. And in District 5, Miriam Abadams. So the basic reasons are we felt those three candidates, in broad sense, had more clear views on the future of the county on these hot button issues. I mean, that's just the broad sense. This is not to say that the other candidates didn't have very, you know, logical and thought through plans. We just, it was very close, honestly. It was a very challenging and heated debate behind closed doors, if you will, about which ones to go to. So it was a challenging sort of thing. So it is, that's basically where it came down to. We tried in the editorials to explain our logic, because honestly, our goal in the endorsements was to give people the information they needed to make their choice. And if they disagreed with our logic, they should ignore us. That's certainly not going to hurt our feelings. You know, it's just, it's really about information. And that's where it comes down to. Now, of course, the problem with endorsements is no matter what you do, you're going to get half of the county upset with you one way or the other. And that's, and we accept that, yeah, you know,
that's politics.
That is politics.
Yeah. I want to go back to the phones, and Sam in Napa is called in. Good morning, Sam. Thanks for calling Forum.
Hello. My concern is the discussion hasn't touched on what I hear is the real buzz in the community, which is that Napa is in danger of becoming mostly a playground for the wealthy and not focused on locals at all. We had a 60% hotel vacant occupancy rate last year, and there are 1,000 more high-end hotel rooms in the pipeline. So my concern is looking for someone who will focus on locals, not on the next world-class $1,000-a-night hotel. And I think that's pretty clear in the District 4 race. Amber Manfrey is supported by the Sierra Club and other environmental interests. She'll be much more concerned about focusing on locals, protecting what we have in the Napa Valley, and not tipping toward overdevelopment.
Well, thanks so much, Sam, for calling in, sharing your perspective. Dave, what do you make of that, you know, dynamic or fear that residents have of potentially having the county turn into, as Sam said, a playground for the wealthy?
Yeah, I appreciate Sam's question, because the issues around inequality, for example, and what happens by those who are working in the food service industry, those that are working in winery tasting rooms, or those that are doing production and then being unable to afford to live in the communities in which they work. And that affects obviously their whole families, healthcare, housing, all of these issues. We see this over and over again, and the wine industry has tried to address this by pushing issues of sustainability and talking about sustainability, about being good stewards of the land. They've done this throughout wine growing regions. That's certainly been an element, but the infrastructure around wine that includes those Michelin-starred restaurants, that includes world-class XYZ that Sam was talking about, do present really hard issues that affect communities, and particularly those that are asking for more, that have kids in school and are different than those who are retired or have a second home in Napa or in Napa County. And those issues do come to the board. Those issues do come to the Planning Commission. And those are hugely important, because it's not just who wins these races, it's who they appoint and what networks they create. And this is part of the element of what you see with what comes the next cycle, or who comes downstream, because who's serving as their appointments on boards and commissions for the member, him or herself, they serve, if you will, as kind of a barometer of direction. And that does get divisive. And even though there is a lot of support for the wine industry, there is a lot of tension in there, especially as the wine industry consolidates or looks for changes that they've seen with consumers, and not just wanting to make their product a playground for the rich, but accessible by all. All of that tension, I think, comes to bear in these particular races that we see on the board. Again, a barometer of what is to come throughout California as we wrestle with these issues.
And Carlos, you've done a lot of reporting on workers in vineyards. What are some of the top concerns for those workers and the groups who advocate for them?
Yeah. And this, you know, in this year and in both 2022, I asked every single candidate, you know, there is a strong push by workers' advocates for there to be some sort of fund, some sort of compensation for farm workers when they can't go outside to work when there are wildfires. You know, when there's a wildfire very near, very close to your vineyard, where the place where you work, you should not, I mean, you know, health experts do not recommend you being out there, one, because of the immediate risk of the fire, but two, because of all that smoke you're being exposed to. And in Sonoma County, a couple years back, activists strongly pushed and were able to compromise with the county to get set a fund of a couple million dollars for the cases of emergencies and for these types of emergencies. In Napa County itself, during the pandemic, we even saw the city of American Canyon pass actually require employers, supermarkets, to pay their workers a little more because they were in danger of being exposed to COVID. So we do see a precedent. And in fact, in American Canyon, one of the people that voted in favor of that was Mariam Abudamus. When I asked her the same question, like, would you support, you know, requiring vineyards, you know, paying a little more to their workers in these sort of situations or compensating them for the days that they weren't able to work? She said, well, you know what? We're not there. You know, we're not there yet. I want to hear from both sides.
It struck me that, you know, when you talk to the D5 candidates, I think both of them mentioned like, well, this is something nonprofits are working on.
100%. And this is what we've heard in every single race. You know, it's what I heard in Supervisor Cottrell's race and Supervisor Gallagher's race. And I wouldn't be surprised if we would hear something similar in the other two districts. And, that's an answer that doesn't satisfy farm worker advocates. It's some, you know, the Napa Valley Community Foundation, has done incredible work and has benefited thousands of families. There, it's still something that needs to be figured out. Is it a responsibility of the employers, and then it's the county that has to require employers, or should we leave it all to the philanthropic side? While there is a lot of money flowing through philanthropy in Napa, at the end of the day, these vineyards, have access to a huge percentage of land that could be used in different ways, a huge percentage of the workforce, and of the county's natural resources.
This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information on how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Alexis Madrigal. And we're going to continue our conversation talking about three elections for the Board of Supervisors in Napa County. Dave, I think one thing looming over all of this is the fact that there are no term limits for supervisors in Napa. How have you seen that kind of impact governance on the board?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about Napa's politics and where it's come, say, from the famous Paris Wine Competition, the mid-1970s, all the way forward, the legacy of Mondavi, the legacy of so many giants in the valley, much of that has been percolated and peppered with members of the board who've been on the board a long time. And that sometimes has been helpful for Napa in terms of protection, in terms of transit, in terms of getting dollars for corridors on Highway 29. But obviously, that creates, for example, traffic. It has also driven dollars as the state has left certain institutions or driven dollars to things like the state hospital or to parks. So it's been typically peppered with long-term members of the board, not a lot of turnover or elections. And I think what you're seeing here in Napa with these three seats up and what you're seeing in other areas is this kind of rapid turnover or generational change. The state is much more democratic than it was when Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected governor in the recall and Gray Davis was thrown out, for example. And that means that there's not just a lot more Democrats, there's a lot more different types of Democrats who are demanding access. And you see this at school boards and in local government. And that's what's changed, if you will, the flavor of what's happening in local politics throughout California and the Bay Area and in Napa, even though it's been a little bit behind the times in that regard. So there's more turnover, there's more kind of percolating of ideas and different interests and different goals, different priorities at the local level. That's all crashing together for these three seats, typical of what we see in other areas as well.
We're going to go back to the phones, and Gary is in Napa. Hey, Gary, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to just make a little statement regarding the monolithic economy that's supported by the wine industry, per se. The types of things that it drives are low-paying jobs. Basically, wineries or restaurants are all the supporting types of infrastructure that supports tourists. And in the middle class, by and large, is just falling by the wayside. You know, the things that sort of prove that, in my mind, are the school district attendance is falling fairly dramatically over the past 10 years or so. And we've also seen the amount of traffic increased with people coming in for jobs that are low paying. About 25% of our traffic flow coming into Napa every day are people that are doing low paying jobs. And that's a good indication of they just can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. So that gets back to the issue of affordable housing and all that other kind of stuff. So just the, this, and 45% of the industry is owned by corporations also. So corporations, as we know, tend to always want profits on the bottom line. And they don't always tend to pay the best jobs, you might say, compared to a couple of the independent wineries in the valley that pay a living wage of $40, $42 an hour, that kind of stuff. So well, anyway, that's about all I want to say.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. I really appreciate it. Carlos, I mean, this issue of a workforce, you know, coming into the county, needing to deal with issues like traffic. I don't know if you or Nisa heard about this from candidates.
Yeah. And I'll just go, I'll briefly go over what I've heard. And Nisa, you can add. I think, you know, what we've heard is a question about land and land usage. And what I kind of this refrain I've heard over the years is like the county has the money, the cities have the land. Right. So a lot of the land that the county has is actually zoned for agricultural or wildlife purposes. To change its zoning is a really complicated process. So then that's why the county really focuses on partnering up with cities and towns for infill opportunities for land that the cities already have that, you know, that's where you can then have middle income housing. But that's, I think that's also one, you know, one skill that any of these candidates need to have really well, which is developing partnerships with local city officials, because, there's several city officials, whether that's in Napa City, American Canyon, Yountville, that may tell you that working with the county is really complicated and really tough, and they might not as well do it. But so having that skill to working with city town officials is something that these candidates need to hone before they start, you know, their service, their time.
Yeah, all I really wanted to add is that this caller, as well as our previous caller, who was kind of talking about the, like who's looking out for like the human part of residents of Napa County, and I just wanted to point out, for what it's worth, Amber Manfrey is endorsed by the Service Employees International Union, as well as the National Union of Healthcare Workers. So she is supported by two major labor unions. Piedmont is also supported by a labor union, the Cal Firefighters. But that's something I just wanted to throw out there, too.
And Dan, quickly, we have about 30 seconds left. Wondering if you could touch on the D2 race in District 2, what you're seeing there, and kind of give us a quick summary of the dynamics between those two candidates.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. The two candidates there are Liz Alessio and Doris Gentry. Liz is a current member of the Napa City Council. Doris was a member of the City Council. She ran for mayor in 2020 and was defeated. She is Doris is a landowner, a landlord, has really been very big about being a foster parent. She's also the chair of the Napa County Republican Central Committee. Liz is created, sounds like I'm out of time, but very much about
running, running out of time there. But thank you so much, Dan Evans, executive editor of the Napa Valley Register. We also heard from Dave McEwen, professor of political science at Sonoma State University, and our two reporters here from KQED's amazing audience news team, Carlos Cabrera, Loma Lee, Nisa Khan. Thank you to you all. Thank you to our listeners for calling in. Do not forget to vote in Napa before March 5th. 3 seats up on the Board of Supervisors. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Lexis Madrigal. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.